Calls for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's Call for Action's president and your host, Shirley Rooker.
Are consumers very knowledgeable about credit scores? Well, yes and no. There are some surprising gaps in consumers' knowledge about recent changes in credit scores, for example, and the availability and what the numbers really mean. Well, we're going to discuss this, and we're also going to talk about the fact that there's such an appalling lack of savings in this country. Our guest is Steve Brobeck. He's the Executive Director of the Consumer Federation of America. Steve, welcome to Of Consuming Interest.
Thank you, Shirley. Pleased to be here.
Now, for everybody to let them know, I've known Steve for years. I have such respect for your organization, and you all get involved in some great issues. And I think this whole business about credit scores, first off, there's tremendous amount of confusion on consumers' part. And as a survey that you all did, a national survey, there is a tremendous lack of knowledge. That's the scary thing, isn't it?
Yes. Well, in fact, there's good news as well as bad news, because consumers do understand some essential characteristics of credit scores. They understand that those scores do influence whether they can get credit and at what price. They also understand that if they don't pay their bills on time, they're going to have a lower credit score. But many of them are not aware, for example, that non-creditors such as electric utilities, telephone companies, even a landlord may use your credit scores to force you, for example, to contribute a larger initial deposit. Also, consumers are not aware of some of the recent changes that have taken place in the credit score marketplace.
Okay. Well, let's talk about this lack of awareness and the fact that your credit scores impact so many aspects of your life. For example, getting insurance, getting a job, any of these items can be impacted. Am I correct?
Yes, almost anything to do with your financial life can be affected. The good news is that employers are not using the scores, but you know what they are doing increasingly is they're using the credit reports, that is the data about your credit history held by the three main credit bureaus that serve as the basis for the credit scores.
Well, they can look at that and learn a lot about a consumer.
They certainly can. And in fact, so these credit scores are closely related to the data. And the two key things that consumers have to remember is pay your bills and particularly your loan payments on time.
Absolutely. And that doesn't mean 5 days late.
No, it doesn't. It means on time. And, for example, if you are 60 days late a couple times, you're going to lose probably more than 100 points on your credit score. And the second thing is don't borrow too much on your credit cards. The more you borrow, in general, the lower your score. And if you go above 50%, your score is really going to suffer.
That's right.
So if you have a credit card with a $5,000 limit and you run up $3,000 in debt and you carry that debt, your score is going to decline.
You know, the thing that we used to tell people to close out their extra credit card accounts. Well, the thinking in the industry has changed so much since then that what I now tell consumers is keep those credit card accounts because the way you use credit is the important thing and how much of it you're using and much the available credit, which is exactly what you're saying. And that is really significant. And consumers, I don't think they realize that. They think, I've got this big line of credit. I can just go ahead and use it.
And of course, as you and I have been saying for decades, Shirley, the most important thing that consumers should do about their credit cards is try to pay down and pay off their balances every month.
Treat their credit card as
a charge card, basically.
Yeah. And you know what? Because if you start figuring out how long it will take you if you pay the minimum amount on a credit card, which usually has a fairly significant interest rate, you'll never get it paid off.
I mean,
it takes years and years and years and years.
If you're in a penalty rate situation where you're paying maybe 25 to 30% interest on the debt, you may never, ever, if you just make the minimum payment, pay off that debt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really surprising. You know, when we're talking about credit scores, I want to make a clarification here for our listeners. Your credit record that you get from the credit bureaus, your free one, which I tell everybody to go to annualcreditreport.com, And once every 4 months, get a credit report from one of those credit bureaus because you're entitled to it. And it's really important to keep on track of what's in your credit report. But the other thing is credit scores are not reflected in the annual credit report you get for free.
That's correct. You have to, well, you can sometimes now get those credit scores for free if you're clever. But usually you're going to have to spend between, say, $10 and $20 to obtain each score. The scores should be, they will be most reliable if they are based on the information in one of the three credit bureaus, Experian, Equifax, or TransUnion. But there are an increasing number of what we call generic scores. Now, a very important point that we know many consumers don't understand is that those scores that you purchase are not the scores that are used by lenders. The lenders have their own scores. In fact, each individual lender will have his or her own score, probably, and they will treat, even if they have decided, lender A and lender B, that you have the same score, they may treat you differently as a borrower. In fact, lender A may consider you to be a subprime borrower and charge you a higher rate, and lender B may consider you to be a prime borrower and charge you a lower rate.
You know, that is really significant for consumers when they're shopping around for credit, because that's what you have to do, isn't
it? Well, that's the bottom line is you have to shop around for credit. Just because you have a good or even an excellent credit score is not going to guarantee you the lowest rate and the best terms on a loan.
I think that is surprising to many people to realize that there's such a difference in the way those scores are valued by the lenders. Yes, that is such an important message for consumers. Okay, well, now let's go back and talk about the credit scores itself and the things that impact on it. Now, we've just talked about how important it is to keep your payments on time. One of the things that consumers are often concerned about is just whether or not even getting a copy of their credit report or a credit score will cause a decrease in it. But they don't realize that that is not a negative on their credit.
No, and in fact, or even shopping around for a credit card. All these will, at worst, have a very marginal effect on your credit score, and you shouldn't worry about that. What you should worry about, again, is making those all the payments on time,
right,
and not running up too much credit card debt. And of course, and consumers, according to our survey, understand this. If people go into bankruptcy or they lose their home, that's going to very adversely affect their
credit
scores.
Oh, yes, of course. That's such a critical thing to have happened to them. Well, let's just let our listeners know they're tuned in to Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Steve Brobeck. He's the executive director of the Consumer Federation of America, which is a group that has been around for since when?
1968.
Okay. Call for Action is a little bit older. Ha ha. Gotcha, Steve. I've known Steve for a long time and have a great deal of respect for what they do. And they've recently commissioned a study on what consumers know about credit scores. And it was surprising in many ways. I think in the lack of knowledge is of concern. What were the things that raised the most red flags for you in terms of what consumers didn't know about credit scores?
Well, actually, it appears that many consumers are sort of living in the past. That is, their understandings are based on the credit score marketplace of 5 or 10 years ago, not on the current credit score marketplace. There have been a proliferation, for example, of what we call the generic scores. These are the scores that you can get when you go online. They're not the scores that the individual lenders use. Those are lender-specific scores. And one of the most...
Let me just stop you and ask you a question. But are they close? Are they generally somewhat close?
Well, they approximate.
Okay.
Yes.
And in fact,
that's why it's so important to comparison shop for credit.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
it's possible that a lender would give you an unfairly low score and charge you then too much for credit. But
you
can protect yourself if you then comparison shop and ask three or four lenders for quotes. But what consumers often don't understand when they go out and they get several credit scores is that increasingly there are two scales that are used. So there's the FICO scale, which is 300 to 850, And there's the Vantage Score scale, which is higher, and that one's 501 to 990. And so people think that if they have a score of 700, it's always good. Well, if it's on the FICO scale, it's good. But if it's on the Vantage Score scale, it's mediocre. And when I actually went out and purchased credit scores for myself, I was surprised that they varied by 100, 120 points. And I was also surprised, actually, that some of my scores were outstanding and some of my scores were only good.
Really?
And it was because one set was based on the Vantage Score scale and credit scoring system, and then the other was based on FICO. So people need to be aware. Here's the key thing when you get a score to ask yourself. Where is it on the scale? There will, in all probability, be a 0 to 100% scale. Are you at 90%, 60%, 40%? If it's the Vantage Score scale, there will probably be a letter that approximates the grades that we received in school, A through F. And so that's sort of a better indicator, perhaps, than a scale for some people of how well they're doing. But so just because you got a 700, 750 you shouldn't be too happy until you understand where that score is on the scale.
Right. Yeah, that is because people go, oh, well, I have a 750 score, and that doesn't necessarily mean good things. Yeah, that is a very interesting thing, because people have been used to tossing around these numbers for years, and then suddenly there's competition in the marketplace, and FICO is not the only score that's out there now. And consequently, well, Vantage Score, who I think were partners with you in doing this survey, and there are others. There are others as well. So that's not part of Experian, is it? Because Experian has a scoring model.
Well, the Vantage Score was actually created by the three credit bureaus to provide an alternative to FICO.
Mm-hmm.
And the FICO scores are used widely by the mortgage lenders.
Mm-hmm.
Increasingly, some of the consumer lenders are using the Vantage Score systems and algorithms
Steve, do you think it's important for consumers to get scores from, say, Vantage and from FICO? I mean, how do they know what they ought to look at? Let's suppose someone is thinking about buying a house, which we hope they will do in today's market. What would you recommend that they do in preparation for this? First off, they should get copies of the credit report so they can check and make sure there are no negative items, et cetera, that don't belong to them. But beyond that, should they get a credit score from both?
I would do is two things. First of all, they ought to get, as you encourage people to do, to get their free credit report from the three bureaus, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. And there is a website that you'd mentioned that people can go to and get that very easily. The second thing they should do is probably get a score based on each of the three credit reports, the three bureaus. And I believe the easiest way to do that now is to actually purchase those scores from Experian.
Mm-hmm.
If you purchase them from FICO, you'll only get scores from two of the three credit reports. And that's not bad, but I think I'd want scores from all three.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And you can do that by going to, what is it?
Their websites.
Their free credit report at Experian, I guess.
No, you can just Google Experian or Google FICO. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because you don't want to end up the wrong place. You want to make sure you know who you're dealing with when you're getting credit scores, because there are a lot of websites that sound kind of similar
The good news is that increasingly, because of rules that went into effect in January and rules that are going to be issued this summer, lenders are going to clearly be providing consumers and potential borrowers with more information about their credit scores. So when you go out, in particular when you're borrowing for a mortgage loan, you should ask the lender if they'll make available your credit score that they're using as the basis for their pricing and terms.
I believe it's a requirement that they release that to you if you're denied a loan.
Yes. Well, increasingly what's going to happen is they're going to have to, by by the fall, they're either going to have to report adverse conditions or just give everyone the score. And what the industry tells us is that the easiest thing for them to do is just give everybody their score rather than report the adverse conditions.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that will be a boon for consumers because then we'll know where we stand. But I don't generally tell people they ought to go out and just get their credit score. I tell them to get their credit reports.
Yes, that is our advice, too.
I mean, unless you've got some compelling reason for it, you should keep track of your credit reports to see that they're accurate. And generally, if they're accurate, you're going to have a fairly decent, if they're good. Mm-hmm. But for financial things, you're going to buy a car, buy a house, rent an apartment, all of those things you really need to get a credit score beforehand, right?
Well, that would be the small expenditure is worth it.
Absolutely, because it really does provide you with a model of where you are in terms of everybody else.
Mm-hmm. And you may misread your credit report, too.
True. A
lender may read it a different way, and
true.
So that's a check.
Yeah, that's very, very true. Okay, well, one of the things that kind of goes hand in hand with this credit and our credit scores is whether or not consumers are actually saving money. Now, I don't mean going out and buying bargains. I mean putting it in the bank, putting it in investment, putting it somewhere and not spending it. And that's just really not happening, is it? Not at the rate you think and I think it should be.
The most discouraging thing for us is that low and moderate income households, and that's 40 up to 50% of all households in the country, because, typical incomes of typical households have not really increased for over a decade. They're around $50,000. And is that the large majority of these households have not saved very adequately. In fact, if you look at the bottom 40%, that's all the households with incomes of under, say, around $40,000, only around 40% of them even have a savings account. And many of those that have a savings account have very small balances in those savings accounts. Now, if you don't have a savings account, how are you going to pay for the emergencies, which some of our survey research suggests that people experience 3 to 5 times a year? Mm-hmm. The car breaks down. You have to spend $300 for new brakes or new brake shoes, or your child needs new shoes, or you have an emergency dental appointment that's going to cost $100. Or, even you have a speeding ticket and are going to have to spend $75.
Right.
And people,
especially with speed cameras these days.
And quite a few households do not even have the savings that allow them to make those unexpected expenditures. And so what do? Well, they go to their relatives, or maybe they put that charge on a credit card, and then the debts mount up and they pay very high interest. So that's very disturbing. But even more affluent people, many of them are not saving adequately enough for a secure retirement.
Let's just take a pause and let our listeners know they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Steve Brobeck. He's the Executive Director of the Consumer Federation of America. And we've been discussing the whole issue of credit scores and the fact that Americans, we're not saving money like we should. But Steve, going back to this issue of the income of the households, I can understand that. But at the same time, these are often the people who get caught up in credit card debt with high interest rates, who get caught up into payday loans, all of which is sapping their resources.
Yes. What I think some of those folks fail to understand is that the cost of credit for a payday loan, it may be 300 to 400%, is so high that actually diminishes their purchasing power.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd be so much better if they just deferred a purchase, saved a little money, and paid cash. There's quite a lot of research on whether low and moderate income households have any discretionary income so that they could afford to save. And the consensus is that most households, the ones that are not in the middle of a crisis because they've lost a job or whatever, or have one huge, say, health bill that they have to pay, can afford to save something. And now, fortunately, there are some mechanisms that help people to save. Because of the banking industry has implemented the latest technology, they will now take money automatically from your checking account and put it in a savings account, as little as $25 a month at most banks and credit unions if you ask them to do that.
And you know, that adds up, Steve.
It does, and what you really don't miss. One large bank, Bank of America, is actually advertising heavily on television this auto-save feature. Most of the banks will offer it, and we strongly encourage everyone to consider that option, particularly people who have difficulty saving.
And, you know, especially when you're young and you start saving, it's amazing how it adds up. It may not seem like very much at the time.
Well, and people complain about the yields now because interest rates are artificially low. They've been driven low because that's all related to the financial crisis and the recession. But the two key things to remember is that it's those deposits that you make that really add up. And then interest rates are going to rise again when we truly come completely out of the recession. The Federal Reserve Board will allow interest rates to rise, and then the yields will increase, and then people will be able to take advantage of the miracle of interest compounding, so that, which means that, say, over a 30 to 40 year period, even at just a 4% or 5% yield, at the end of that 30 to 40 year period, what you have will mainly be interest accumulation. It won't be mm-hmm. your actual deposits.
Isn't that amazing?
Deposits. Yes, it's economists call it the only miracle in economics, interest compounding.
Well, this phenomenon of not saving has been going on for a while, and I know because I've discussed it with other people. What does one do to turn it around? I mean, I don't know. I guess you just start with small increments and educating consumers at the importance of it.
Yeah. Well, it's actually gotten worse with the increasing market of credit, particularly credit cards. Mm-hmm. Back even as recently as the 1980s, the savings rate was over 10%. It then declined fairly steadily, right up until earlier in the last decade when it was negative for a quarter or two. Now we're back up in the 4 to 6% range, which is okay, not great. But mm-hmm. what's important is that we sustain that rate. The key thing is that people need to look at their expenditures every month, find expenditures that they can cut, can shave, and then take that money and save it automatically. Ask their bank or credit union to withdraw $25, $50, $100. What happens for many families is they start with $25 or $50, and as it accumulates, they realize that they can save more, and so they increase that to $75, $100, maybe $200. And then in several years, they're in great shape, and they can afford, for example, if they're relatively young now, in the new mortgage market, they can afford to make a down payment on a house.
Yeah, and you know what? You can even start saving money by clipping coupons. I have a friend who is a fantastic coupon lady. I mean, she is incredible. She gives this money that she saves. She puts it aside, and she gives it to her grandchildren, which I think
good
is such
her.
A neat thing. And it's yep. amazing the amount of money she gives her grandchildren, because she is really good at this. Well, we just have a half a minute here. Any other your website, Steve? What is your website?
It's consumerfed.org.
Okay, consumerfed.org. They've got wonderful information there. You've got information on your credit score report and a whole host of other issues that your organization is involved in. Any last words?
Well, just
save.
Save. That's right. Be a saver, not a spender.
Yeah. So much. It's a little harder to do. It's easy for us to say.
We all like to spend.
Oh, yes. It's that instant gratification. We want it now. Well, Steve, thank you so much for joining us. Oh, you've been listening to Of Consuming Interest right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest has been Steve Brobeck, Executive Director of the Consumer Federation of America. I'm Shirley Rooker, and we thank you for joining us.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.